Should I describe my day to you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I slept until like 11.
Oh my, man, lazy. I woke up at 9 o'clock on the air comforter in their apartment, and I walked out and there was nobody moved in the entire apartment.
I don't think I was making so much noise.
No.
Yeah.
Zach especially, he was being especially lazy this morning.
Oh yeah.
I'm used to him being up like waking me up at like 7 after I went to bed at 3 or something.
Yeah.
7?
Yeah.
I'm just joking. Yeah. No, he's right.
Zach, 7 is late for you, I feel like.
Used to be. It's my break, man.
Now it's just normal for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Couldn't be me.
We have to address the elephant in the room, which is that this is the first episode that we've recorded in
ever.
Like 6 months or 5 months or something like that. And the reason for that is, of course, that Zach and I got into a really bitter argument.
They didn't talk for months.
And we didn't talk for a while. There may have been like damaged property involved. It was pretty
He's
bad.
Right. I was damaged and Ben thought I was his property. So.
Right. We had to get that cleared up a little bit. And so now Zach is back to being my property and all things are restored to to where they're supposed to be.
Sounds like you guys have an interesting relationship.
Yeah. Behind the scenes is a little bit different.
Yeah, the viewer never really understands what happens behind the scenes.
It's pretty toxic.
Yeah.
It's like the Ellen DeGeneres show.
This is like the Call Her Daddy podcast breakup. Like, it's like that level.
Yeah. Anyway, we're good now.
Right.
For the money, right?
Yeah. For the money. We had to clear up, like, some monetary things.
Yeah.
Was the main concern.
So now Ben
and
makes
Zach
98%.
Had to affirm that he loves me more than medical school.
That's a lie.
And so now that he's gotten his big project out of the way or whatever that he was working on, now he can devote most of his time to the movie vault and not to trying to get into med school.
Which is still far away. So blatant lies are being told.
It's in your crosshairs.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, I guess.
But we'll see. Don't mean to bore the listener with all of this talk. We really want to get right into the subject matter, which is, of course, the movie that nobody has been talking about since it came out, Spider-Man No Way Home. A movie so underrated and underappreciated that we had to bring it to the forefront through the platform that we have here at the Movie Vault. It features some low-level actors like Tom Holland, Zendaya, Benedict Cumberbatch, and John Watts, who has only directed like 2 other Spider-Man movies and nobody else knows anything that he's done. He's nothing compared to your favorite art house cinema director, but I guess they couldn't get David Lynch to come on for this movie. So, and it also may feature some surprise actors from some other lame comic book movies.
Oh, please, if you haven't seen it yet, just come on.
Yeah, it's your own fault.
From this point on, we will have a spoiler warning. If you haven't seen Spider-Man No Way Home, then first of all, I don't know what you've been doing with your life.
Yeah.
Like, this was the only movie that was in theaters. When I went to see it for the first time, I was in Mississippi, and literally every movie theater the whole theater was showing Spider-Man, and they showed it like once every 15 minutes. They started a new showing. And you still couldn't get, like, if you didn't order tickets ahead of time, you still had to sit in the front 2 rows for like the next 2.5 hours. So that's what we did. Because of course we didn't order tickets ahead of time. Who would do that? I mean, unless you were watching Nightmare Alley, which I'm sure was not a great movie, then you had to have been watching this. Or if you don't like movies, then I don't know why you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Leave. So I guess we'll go person by person, and I'd like to hear your overall first impressions of the movie, and like what spoke to you, what connected with you, and your deepest innermost emotions, and what was kind of repulsive? What made you kind of want to throw up your movie theater popcorn in the bathroom after?
All right, Connor, go. You can go first.
Okay, so this is a good movie.
Okay.
It was solid, a little above average. No, I thought it was really good. Yeah, I would say in overall in the MCU was probably, I would say top 5.
Top 5.
Originally, right after I saw it, was like, this is the best ever.
And you did say that.
It was a little bit of recency bias. So I'd say it's like number 4 and number 5. Very good. Obviously the emergence of Toby and Andrew was the best part in my opinion. So
yeah. Anything repulsive about it?
maybe a little bit too much comedy, although I did appreciate it.
No, I agree, yeah.
I mean, I like my superhero movies to be a little more adult, but yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Just, you know, radar.
Okay, yeah. No, that's fine. I agree with you. Like the Netflix shows.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or like Blade. Have you ever seen Blade?
I haven't seen
Blade. That's like the OG R-rated superhero movie. Yeah.
You would like it.
Yeah,
it's good.
You would like Blade. Yeah. It's also not that funny, so it would be right up your alley.
No humor.
No humor.
No humor in Connor's superhero movies.
I like a little sprinkle of humor, but not a overwhelming.
Well, Marvel's kind of developed their own like style of humor, so it's like it's a little bit predictable anytime you go into a Marvel movie because you're like, oh, that's a Marvel joke right there.
Yeah, the Marvel jokes come when the music stops and the characters are looking at each other. That's it.
That's pretty much, yeah.
It's pretty accurate.
Yeah, and they're so... Yeah, I don't know what exactly makes them similar, but there's just every single time. Like, they never deviate from, like, the formula, when it comes to humor.
Yeah, to give mine, I kind of agree with Connor that there was one part where... like, remember when all three Spider-Men, so Toby, Andrew, and Tom are all together in, like, on the Statue of Liberty and the, whatever, the scaffolding. And they're talking about, like, oh, we don't know how to work as a team. And he says, I was on the Avengers. They say, what is the Avengers? And he goes, you're in a band? Are you in a band? He was excited. Like, for me, like, that was, like, whatever, it was a funny line, but, like.
I laughed.
It was good. Yeah, it was a laugh. But, like, they're in the middle of a battle.
That was it. Yeah. That was the thing. That scene was mostly, maybe there was a couple, like, corny jokes here and there. But mostly that scene was pretty well written, besides the fact that, like, the placement of the scene in the movie was a little odd. Like, I guess it was maybe supposed to break the tension before they got into, like, a huge fight. But at the same time, it was, like, they seemed very calm for, like, the, like, what the seriousness of the situation required.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did like their interactions. I thought they were really good. You know, Tom, Andrew, and Toby. I mean, Andrew and Toby came back portraying the same characters as they did, what is it, like 10 years ago and 20 years ago? So that for me, that's impressive because I felt like they were the same characters. I also felt like they were a little bit different, too, in a good way. Because Toby came back as like the elder Spider-Man, kind of giving wisdom, and he was more serious, although he had his funny moments. Andrew came back kind of as his same goofy self because now he's middle-aged or whatever. But he came back saying that, like, he talked about when Gwen died, which was the end of the second movie, so that's the last time we saw him. He says that he stopped pulling his punches, and he got dark and kind of went through this phase that Tom Holland was feeling. So I thought that was, like, the additions that they had to the original storylines that we'd seen, I thought were only positive and made it better, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to kind of speak with that, I thought it would have been interesting if when they were kind of describing... you know, the battles they fought in their movies, if they, like, mentioned different battles that we didn't see in their movies. So it's like their stories continuing off, I guess, off screen that we didn't see. Because obviously, after the last Toby movie, he's still Spider-Man, still probably has encounters. So
yeah, and they're giving an option. Whether or not they'll use it is probably unlikely, but to open up those stories again and make new movies
exactly
with the characters now revitalized. I know that Connor I think has done this, and I did it to some degree, as people went back to watch the older movies and re-remember, like, and like memes have been spreading around about them, and like it's like this movie wasn't just for like this version of Spider-Man, it was for all versions of Spider-Man. Like, it repopularized and put new energy into, like, every Spider-Man franchise that has been made since 2002, when the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man came out with Tobey Maguire. And so that's been interesting to see how I guess you'd have to maybe credit that to Sony to a degree, because they're kind of responsible of the Spider-Man character. But before, people had kind of been, like, on this train that, like, Marvel under Disney has been much better, and... like Sony's Spider-Man's kind of like a second or third place, which still might be how some people view it, but now there's like they seem like they're more on an equal playing field than they were before this movie came out.
Yeah, no, it's no longer comparing, like you said, because people would always be like, who's your favorite Spider-Man before this movie? Now it's like they're trying to explain you can enjoy all three at the same time without like compromising not liking another one or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what my biggest takeaway from this movie is, other than the fact that it was impressive how they were able to pull off this whole having three separate of the same singular superhero in one movie, played by three different actors who had three different backstories, and make it so I feel so natural. Like, there's so many ways they could have done this that would have, like, been completely, you know, it would have just been clunky and felt forced. But this felt like they didn't overplay it. Like, they weren't in the entire movie. Like, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield weren't in the whole movie, but they were in just enough of it to appreciate, you know, they were more than a cameo, obviously. But you could still center around the main Spider-Man character played by Tom Holland and his story.
Yeah, yeah. So, I was happy about that, too. I was expecting a cameo, and I would have been happy with that. But them being involved in the story kind of made it better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like how it still feels like it's Tom's movie. Like, especially at the end, like, we still understand it's Tom's movie.
Yeah, especially...
It didn't get taken over by the other guys.
Yeah, especially since they're both kind of pouring into Tom's life. Or... Peter Parker's life. Like, they're both kind of just giving him advice. So it's about Tom. It's Tom's story. They're just sharing their past experiences. They're not going on any journeys necessarily. Although that there was a sweet scene where Andrew catches MJ and then he starts crying and she goes, "Are you okay?" Like, after he asks if she's okay. That was my favorite scene probably from the movie.
Yeah. That was definitely a good scene. Okay. So now getting to the mechanics of the plot. One of the things that's interesting about this movie is that It's so dependent on Tom Holland's Peter Parker to start the whole thing. It's like he makes a mistake and it starts this like moving object, like domino effect of mistakes that lead to this entire movie being possible. It's not like there's an outside external force causing this to happen. It's actually that Peter Parker himself made the mistake that led to him basically having to fix his own problem. Like, everything stems back to like a couple of decisions that were made. I guess you kind of have to go back to the end of Spider-Man Far From Home in which Mysterio reveals that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, and then that's released on the Daily Bugle, and then you have some events that can conspire directly after that, where Peter is trying to reckon with how he needs to, you know, handle the public knowing. He gets pressed for criminal charges, and now he's having trouble getting it into MIT, and so are Ned and his girlfriend, MJ. who's the girlfriend of, like, every Spider-Man, and I somehow still forgot the name. And so he goes to Doctor Strange, and he's just like, "Can you fix this with magic?" And therein lies his whole... So what do you think, like, the main thing that Peter is supposed to take away by the end of this movie is? Like what mistake exactly can we narrow this down to?
Kind of like where he went wrong?
Yeah. Where did he go wrong? Like, what was... Because his heart behind it was good. Like, he didn't want his friends to, you know, have their life be messed up because they were friends with him, basically, because they were friends with Spider-Man.
Yeah, in terms of his situation, where he went wrong is him being a good person. I mean, I don't see any other reason, I guess. Unless you guys do.
I don't know.
I think that somewhat it's like he had good intentions, but he was still sort of self-motivated ultimately.
It was the world or him having his experiences. So he... Yeah, it is tough because it's like, yes, they would have wanted to keep the memories, but it really is just, in a way, I think a little bit selfish on some level.
But it's hard because, like, nobody... I guess the thing is, he does have to decide to be Spider-Man. So he's taking on... He wants to take on the responsibility of being Spider-Man without having to accept all of the consequences of what being Spider-Man will entail.
And yes.
Because Tobey Maguire, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, I guess, can physically, like, shoot spider things, like, webs out of his wrists, and it almost feels like he's, like, genetically changed to be Spider-Man. I mean, in some ways, Tom Holland could sort of, like, get rid of his equipment and not be Spider-Man. I mean, he'd still be strong and fast and everything, but he's decided that he has to do this because he has the power to do it, which is like the Aunt May line. That's also the Uncle Ben line.
Yeah.
With great power comes great responsibility. But it's like he has the great power, but he doesn't quite want to take all of the responsibility. I think that's pretty much what they're wrestling with here.
Yeah, and that's what happened in Far From Home. So in Far From Home, it's also his problem that he creates, right?
Right.
He puts the drones on that Zach guy that was flirting with MJ, and that kind of starts, like, this whole thing, and then Mysterio gives the glasses to Mysterio, the Edith glasses. So I think this movie's kind of trying to close off the third part in the trilogy, because in the first two movies, you know, the villain in the first movie, Homecoming, was Vulture, which was created by Tony Stark. Mysterio is also created by Tony Stark, but situationally, they're Peter's fault, and I think he hasn't taken responsibility. He's just fought his way through it. He's gotten consequences, but he hasn't taken responsibility. And I think this movie, he kind of deals with consequences, like Aunt May dying and his family and friends not remembering him. But he also, he's also kind of like matured. He got in his own apartment. He was going to restart his life. Like, his academic record was gone because he had a GED test book in his apartment. So it's kind of like he's finally growing up. And I'm really glad, because I'm going to like his character a lot better, because I didn't necessarily like his character before. He annoyed me. Like, he was a high schooler acting like a middle schooler. Like, who in the right mind would send Tony Stark's drones against one of their friends?
Yeah, just because somebody was flirting. Like,
it's Tony Stark, of course it's dangerous. That's so dumb. And I'm really glad that they're kind of making a change and saying, like, for his next trilogy, which they're doing another three, he might be, you know, more mature and actually man up and be like the comic Spider-Man. I also, Aunt May, sorry to talk, but Aunt May's line, "With great power comes great responsibility," she actually says it was like, she says it a little bit differently. It was like, "With great power there must also come great responsibility," which is actually the original line in the comics. So they changed it up for the Toby and Andrew movies.
A very subtle but also important, you know. I mean change that could come out of this potentially, because this, what this movie excels at ultimately is its love for the fans of Spider-Man. Like, this movie was completely made for people who love Spider-Man and want to see like one of the coolest ideas that you could bring to a Spider-Man movie ever, but it was only set up by all of the other Spider-Man movies to be able to do this. So, like, it would have been a missed opportunity if they didn't try to do this movie in the way that they did, and like bring back some of the people, like even bringing back like J. Jonah Jameson as a slightly different kind of version of himself, this time trying to like be a knockoff Alex Jones.
Oh, he was so great in this
podcast. Yeah. I mean, I do prefer him. I think I prefer him in the original trilogy. I think he was a little funnier in the original.
He's meaner, trilogy. Yeah.
Well, just because like there's more situations with him interacting with other people and things, so that you get like more humor out of him. But he like was definitely, you know, did his part. And J.K. Simmons is a class act, A-level actor. A-list. At best Farmers Insurance commercials of all time. You
know. What about I was wondering, this was a kind of a question that some people disagreed with. Do you think Doctor Strange was right or wrong to try to have them be sent back to their universes to die? I honestly, this might be wrong, but I thought Doctor Strange was right, honestly.
Like, I actually agree.
Yeah, I'll just give my stance. So I think Doctor Strange was right because they didn't know that it was going to work out. Peter took a chance. He didn't really know any, Peter doesn't know anything about the multiverse. Doctor Strange knows way more. And he was trained, like, Doctor Strange has mystical powers that can go multidimensional. Peter has no powers like that, as we know so far. We'll find out.
It makes me think about, I can't remember if it was Infinity War or Endgame, but when the Hulk and the Ancient One have their conversation, and she realizes that, when he tells her that Strange gave up the stone willingly, she realizes, well, he's Strange. He must have had a reason to do it. You know, he's a credible guy in that area.
He is supposed to be the greatest of
exactly,
us.
Exactly. Considering he's so knowledgeable in that field, whatever he says should probably be, you know, what's right.
That is a good point. Wow. Yeah, it just made me mad because Peter didn't even question. And it's like Aunt May wasn't even there, and yet he's taking her advice. And I get it. Aunt May's kind of right somewhat. Like, you shouldn't give up on people, whatever, maybe, sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's just a very specific situation in this sense where it was probably better to just listen to Doctor Strange and send them back.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it's their fate. That's my kind of thought.
But like, he's like, also taking it from their word. Like, he doesn't know if it's their fate. Like, Peter doesn't actually know anything.
Peter is kind of playing God in this scenario, in a sense. And another thing is, with the multiverse, he and Aunt May are treating it kind of like a black and white thing. Is kind of what you're saying, right? So like, this is going to happen. So it's either we save them or they're going to die. But really, because of what Zach said with their lack of knowledge of the multiverse. It may actually be a far more complex
idea. Yeah.
Like, so just, you know, that's such a human trait to kind of like try to make really complicated things like between one choice or another choice, when really it's like a lot of times things are out of our control and we can't choose based on the ability of understanding that it's between just two things. Like, that generally doesn't happen, or we're just like generalizing the issue and not acknowledging that it could be far more complicated.
Yeah, and the other thing is Strange was going to send him back, and Peter just stole it and ends up fighting Doctor Strange. So Peter instigated the fight, right? Because Doctor Strange has to chase him, make sure he doesn't do anything stupid. He instigates that fight, but it could have been a conversation, I feel like. But Doctor Strange wouldn't listen, but that's for his own good.
I also thought it was kind of like dumb and a little unrealistic how Peter won the fight. Like
Dr. with geometry, yeah, and he
like,
says math.
Like, he's like, I'm good at geometry.
Oh, he's beating me. Oh, let me just do some math, and then he traps him. Like,
oh my goodness, they did Doctor Strange so dirty.
They
in that.
Did not.
Like, Doctor Strange doesn't know geometry.
It's like Doctor Strange like when, could just snap him.
It's like when in, what was it, Civil War, when Iron Man said to like, oh, if Cap really wanted to lay you out, he would have, to Peter, right?
Yeah.
So it's
and
like,
he would have.
And that's the same with Doctor Strange. If he really wanted to lay him out, he
just because
could've.
They're the main character in a movie, don't make them beat other.
Like, yeah.
Because Ant-Man beat the Falcon. Of course, Ant-Man would beat the Falcon. But they're making the main character look better for their franchise. Yeah. And Peter's not right, and he wouldn't actually beat. So that frustrated me. That is another thing. That was little, but it.
Because it's his movie, he gets extra powers. That
can
beat anybody.
Math power.
Math powers.
Go do your geometry.
In the moment,
just in case you get in
it's
the
like
mirror.
He's in the moment. He's looking around. He's like, "Let me crunch some numbers in my head real quick." And then, like in 3 seconds, he just has him trapped. Like
Tom Holland wins an Oscar for encouraging kids to.
Do I remember math. I was kind of like confused at that point. I was like, "What?"
That made me mad the first time. The second time and third time, I just ignored it. But
yeah, I guess I didn't think about it a lot, but that is a very good point.
He's in the mirror dimension. Like, of course, like, sure, he can figure out.
Yeah, and he's in Doctor Strange's home turf, right?
Yeah.
Like, he knows that better than anybody.
And Doctor Strange could have ended his life just splitting him open with a portal.
Yeah, but
and
he's
he
not trying to kill him.
No,
he's
he should have. He
should have. Oh, well.
I'm sorry. Okay, never mind.
It means no more movies for Tom, I guess.
Whatever. He's got his trilogy.
Well, it means less money for Marvel, which I don't think they're really going to explore an option that.
And for Sony, that's the only thing they got going.
Yeah, they don't have.
Marvel is
going.
A cow, and Kevin Feige is milking it.
Oh my goodness!
Super hard,
and he's fattening it at the same time.
He's fattening it and milking it.
He's draining it for anything it's worth.
He's like, mating the cow. What do you call that?
Breeding.
Breeding the cow. Yes, breeding the cow so that it will have babies. So that they can have little
so
baby.
And
those
baby
are the,
franchises.
The babies are the TV shows. And the TV shows are going to get milked. And
in Endgame, they had to kill cows and serve the beef. And that was Iron Man and Captain America. And
right.
Serve the beef to the audience. To
that's
get
like
satisfying.
The beef tenderloin.
Still
he was fattening up the cow for 10 years, making us very hungry. And then in Endgame, he finally fed us the meat. But then he's like, oh no, we have no more meat to give. We have to have our customers.
We only have little baby cows that they bred. They have to wait for them to grow up.
Yeah,
and that's
so phase four is just fattening those cows.
We're in the baby phase.
Yeah, the baby cows are growing up.
Got a little WandaVision cow and a little Falcon and the Winter Soldier cow and a Loki cow and...
The Loki cow is weird. It can time travel and stuff. It's strange.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to eat that one.
Yeah. There's one character that I want to mention briefly, though, and that's Howard Happy Hogan, because in this episode, or this episode, this episode of
it's
Marvel,
basically like
I mean,
that.
Kinda, yeah. This movie iteration of Marvel, his condo got completely, destroyed. I was trying to think of a better word, but that pretty much encompasses it. And, I heard that the insurance company that he had it under was Hedman Agent.
Agency.
Hedman, you can tell I haven't done this in a while. Hedman Anglin Agency. So you should contact HAA for any of your auto, home, or business insurance needs. Their reps are great. They insure the car that I drive. They insure my family's cars. They insure my cousin's cars and my uncle and aunt's cars. They do a good job in any situation we've been in. They've been very solid. So you should call 614-486-7300. That's 614-486-7300. And make sure to tell them that Ben and Zach sent you. And I think we should send something to the first person who we hear signs up. Like, we need to incentivize this because
how about
I'm tired
cutouts
of saying
of us?
Of, people hearing this ad and not doing anything about it. Like, you need to actually look at your car insurance and see how much you're paying for it, and then call them just to see, like, what's the worst thing that could happen? Like, they tell you that they can't save you any money. Okay, now you know, like, for sure that.
But
you can't
still tell them Ben and Zach sent you. Yeah, and we'll send you a cardboard cutout of us.
Yeah,
and we'll make me a little bit taller.
Yeah, that's actually a really good incentive. Yeah.
Cardboard cutout. I don't even know how we're gonna package that, but we'll.
Find and Ben out. And I will dress up as whatever you want.
Oh, you can. Yeah, the viewer can like request what you guys dress as.
Well, all right, yeah. Connor.
Yeah, I like this idea.
I think Connor's about to call the number after we're done.
I'm about to call the number right now.
All right. So now that I made that fantastic transition, that was very smooth. What are some other aspects of this movie that can be talked about? I mean,
yeah. Another thing, I think the fan service was great, but it really was like half the movie, and it was good. Like, I enjoyed every part of it, but is every movie going to be fan service from now on?
My take on this is that this is what limits it from being like the best, you know, like, or being like a 4.5 star instead of a 4 star or whatever line you're going to draw. I'm not sure what I exactly rated it, but because the fan service just, it makes it feel a little, it mars it a little bit, as it's like its strength and its weakness.
Almost cheapens it, but it's also great.
Yeah, I know. It's weird because if you're saying what's your favorite thing about the movie, it'd be like a lot of the things that are related to having fan service. But it's also sort of like what makes the movie in my head not seem like quite as fantastic when I think about it.
But I'll let this one slide because it's been 20 years.
Yeah, and like nothing. I mean, who else has done something that's like remotely like this? Like, has there been any other movie that's been able to do
it? What was it, the one with M. Night Shyamalan? With Unbreakable?
Oh.
That was the only one. That was, like, 15 years.
But that was planned, wasn't it? Or no, yeah, it wasn't?
It wasn't planned until after Split.
Okay, so they actually had a 15-year, like,
gap. I mean, just a gap.
The first and the last.
Yeah, but that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's three movies.
Really, without anything, any concept, like a... Well, what about Star Wars? Star Wars has done this before, right?
Yeah.
In terms of like crossover, or what?
They don't do fan service. They just go to weird different places.
No, they do fan service because like Luke Skywalker was at the end of Mandalorian. You know,
spoiler alert.
Well, yeah, you're right. That was definitely fan service. You're right.
But sometimes they do like fan unservice. Like, they do the opposite of what fans want.
Like, and then Ben's favorite,
the new trilogy,
like movies. The eighth one, which is the best.
Oh,
I like the eighth one better than the ninth one, I'm gonna be honest.
Well, because the ninth one,
yeah,
we could get into terrible. A little Star Wars rant. So the thing is, the seventh one is a perfect copy of Episode 4,
and it's a good copy paste. Whatever,
it's the exact same movie, just different characters.
I know, literally. You're right.
And we were talking about this the other day.
The eighth one is a great change of pace, change of direction, completely unexpected,
completely unwarranted,
completely a letdown,
and just a rejuvenation of a franchise that felt like it was kind of running into the ground.
You're right, rejuvenation to infancy.
And then the ninth one completely messed up all of the.
Where did that even
changes.
Go? Just, that's so weird.
It didn't even make sense.
Why
either.
Is that? Why I mean, is
they were trying to like they were trying to like retcon Episode 8. They didn't. If they would have doubled down, half the people would have hated it and half the people would have liked it. And now instead, nobody likes the ninth one. So now, not even half the people can like it.
Yeah. Why? Why
no
was
winning?
Why was the Emperor there?
I tried so hard to like it. I could not like
the
it.
The Emperor being there kind of ruins Star Wars.
Why like, did Rey and Kylo Ren kiss?
Yeah, that was
definitely. I saw that coming.
I missed the part where they had tension in the eighth movie, but I thought it was like brother sister tension, and then they kissed, and it was weird for me.
It didn't surprise me, but I didn't like it either. I was like, okay.
It surprised me. I'm done.
I just thought the love triangle thing was so weird.
It was
like, yeah. Why did they need to have like Poe and.
Yeah,
Finn's character was completely ruined from the seventh episode.
And yeah. Everybody's useless.
They set him up in the seventh episode, then just did nothing with him.
Yeah,
the rest of
that
time.
Is the character one. The eighth
wasted
movie,
time.
The eighth movie destroyed. And then Rose was a
yeah. What was
character.
Rose was like?
She was useless.
Yeah.
They were all useless. There was an hour long storyline, whatever, where they go to that place
that,
and save the animals.
True. I often. In the eighth movie that there is a like whole storyline that like does nothing for the plot.
Like, what were the script
think,
people?
I only think
I only think about the cool parts of
like,
Episode 8.
The script writers are literally thinking like, let's just shove this in here, and they're thinking that's a great idea.
To be quite honest, I haven't seen Star Wars Episode 8 since I watched it in the movie theater.
Okay.
So like,
I don't even know how long ago that was.
So like, I'm obviously probably looking at it with a little bit of rose-colored glasses because the theater experience was fantastic.
Everybody was booing.
My favorite theater experience probably ever. Like my favorite movie that I watched in the movie theater, you know, it's probably Star Wars Episode 8. Was the coolest.
Really?
Wait, are you actually being serious?
Yeah, probably. Oh. Like, what else would I have watched in the theaters that would be better than that?
I think that experience-wise, this and Endgame kind of go hand in hand. Well,
that's the thing. I didn't watch Endgame.
Did you not see Endgame? Okay, I was going
to say. You missed out so bad.
Because the thing is, I was such a purist, you know. I wouldn't go watch it because I was behind, you know.
Oh man, it's OCD.
Yeah, I was behind in it. So I had to watch everything before.
I watched Endgame before like I watched any of the other Marvel movies.
That's what got you into it.
That's what, yeah.
Yeah, you're a bandwagon guy.
Yeah.
I guess.
I'm just joking.
No, well, now he's into it, so it doesn't really matter how you got there. The journey doesn't matter; it's the destination, as they say.
You know, I do feel like we're complaining and being grateful about a lot, but like we did get 9 different Marvel properties this year, or 8 in 1 year. True. That's crazy.
Is this good or bad overall for like movies as a whole? Though that's what I often question with Marvel. It feels like. Like, I understand why it's popular, and every time I say that I'm going to, like, stop watching Marvel, I keep watching it. Like, I keep coming back and watching it. It's sort of like candy, you know? Like, you're like, this is my last Christmas cookie that I'm going to eat. And
then you eat
3 or 4 more, you know, in the same night. And you get a stomachache because you consume too much.
No, it's like chips.
That's what Marvel movies feel like to me sometimes. Like, they're like junk food, but...
It's like Lay's barbecue.
Like, you just can't keep coming back. Oh, and the fact is so that like the stuff that's coming out that's not Marvel, that's like more original, is like not really good enough, like to compete. Like, I don't know. The French Dispatch was fun to watch, but like, do you think that like people would go out and enjoy that as much as they enjoyed Marvel movies?
Hey,
like,
it's no longer a competition.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's not a competition. I mean, that's the thing.
But it's no longer.
It's just
even
like,
if it was
with more Marvel movies taking the market share, there's going to be less like creative minds, and everyone's going to be like. They're going to make one independent film and then they're immediately going to be hired by Marvel and they'll never have like an interesting movie again. Like Ryan Coogler, you know, he made like Fruitvale Station, which was like, I mean, it's not my favorite movie, but it was an interesting enough like movie about a historical event. And then he did what, Creed? And then he did Black Panther.
That was so good.
Oh, well, Creed is good, but again, they're like, they're taking these guys who could come up with their own ideas, but instead now they have to write their own original vision into something that's like already a created property. Yeah. And again, I don't know exactly whether I should be like complaining about that always, because like some of the movies do turn out pretty good.
So, yeah, but you're right. It kind of changed. Like what could have been?
Instead of being like, oh man, I'm going to go watch the new Martin Scorsese movie. Like, I'm going to go watch the new Marvel movie, and it just so happens to be directed by Martin Scorsese. And no, Martin Scorsese's not directing a Marvel movie.
You know,
like the way that people consume movies and decide what movies they're going to consume is like changing, or has already changed like a while ago.
Oh yeah, streaming.
Yeah.
But this will never happen, but the day Marvel gets Quentin Tarantino to make a movie is the day that every other film franchise, like there's nothing outside of Marvel. Think of it. Like if you could get Quentin Tarantino to make a Marvel movie, then it's over. Marvel has everything.
I'm trying to think who would be even wilder than Quentin Tarantino.
Well, Martin Scorsese hates Marvel.
Martin Scorsese has said like that Marvel is bad for cinema. That's his opinion.
And I kind of agree with him.
I mean, I kind of agree it's bad for cinema, but it's good for Marvel. Like, it's good for comics. It's good for, like... And it's good for fans of the thing.
And it's good because you're getting... Like, for me, I like it because at least Phase 4 has been nice because you're getting stuff all the time. So then you're not just waiting so much.
Yeah, but then does that take away, like, the satisfaction of the wait?
Like, well, if you expand the world like it's so like much, maybe.
We live in, like, an instant gratification culture, and now we're being instantly gratified.
Yeah, so I need new ones every day
if
now.
If they're going to continue to instantly gratify us consistently, then I think it's fine. But if they go through, a phase where... Maybe this coming year, where there's less stuff, then, yeah.
The question is, as soon as the quality goes down, how soon will the fans revolt, like... When's going to be... Because my biggest question with Marvel now is where are they going? Like, and I think we might be getting a little bit more into the idea of where they're going after watching this movie. And it is interesting. So I do like that. But after you go through a couple of these build up to Endgame, which was perfect. Like, The build-up to Endgame will never be topped, I don't think. Would you agree?
No, I don't think it is.
So that's the thing. It's the kind of the law of diminishing returns, right? Every Marvel build-up is going to be a little bit less satisfying than the last one. Although they can add little things to, I guess, spice things up.
It's like drugs.
The, yeah.
You need more the more you use.
Right.
I think with the build-ups, it all comes down to how long they build up. If they build something up for a year, okay, whoop-de-doo. If they build something up for 10 years, even if it's not as good as the whole Endgame thing.
You got to do 20 years now?
I'm not saying 20 years, but I'm saying a substantial amount of time they have to build up a bigger plot line. I guess the multiverse can be that.
So 2030 is next big climax movie like Endgame. It would be good. I don't know.
I wouldn't say as good as Endgame, but I would say like good enough to be very satisfying.
Where all 1,000 Marvel characters come together in the screen.
That's just too much.
That's what they have going for them is that they have so many characters that they probably haven't even put like any time into that they could.
Yeah.
But I guess then characters start becoming similar to each other, which now I think they're trying to diversify in terms of like where like the cultures and different things of the superheroes are coming from. So that's like one of the ways that they're trying to like make it more interesting. Like, but whether or not that will have success, I guarantee it will have success monetarily, but whether it will always be successful from a like critical lens or keeping the viewer's attention, I'm not sure.
Good business plan. They need to make villain movies because every Marvel movie is same hero's
that's
journey.
That's what DC, well, no, not DC. Marvel's Sony end is trying to do that a little bit more, I think, with Venom and Morbius now.
Yeah, and if you think about the Marvel villains, a lot of them are really beloved by the fans. You got Loki, the Winter Soldier, Thanos, like lots of villains in the MCU like are fan favorites like in that area.
What, so if they did a Doctor Doom movie?
Origin movie? That would be great.
Goodness. What if they did a Thanos TV show, like, from before Endgame?
Oh, they should do a Thanos TV show of him growing up, like, some of the storylines from the comics.
As a kid?
Yes.
Dude, that would be so fun.
Because some of those storylines are, like, really interesting. It would have to be, like...
With the Eternals,
I think if it was, like, a Netflix show, it would be good. Because some of the storylines for, like, Thanos specifically
needs to be darker,
because it is darker. Like, there's no way they can make that Disney, but...
Yeah.
Do you think that the fact that Disney owns Marvel is going to, like, make them lose some of their chances to, like, go in on some of these storylines?
Yes.
Because, like, are they doing an R-rated Deadpool?
No.
I don't know.
They haven't said anything.
Are they doing any, like, MCU R-rated things?
Because the thing is, Feige has been so against that. Like,
so the director of Doctor Strange, I forget his name now, but the original director... He wanted Doctor Strange 2 to be rated R, which is why he quit the project.
That'll be fitting, I think.
They said no.
Oh, right, because...
Sam Raimi took over.
Who is that guy who did it? What was his name? Scott Derrickson?
Yep, you're right.
So Scott Derrickson did Sinister, which is like a horror movie that's like fairly dark and violent, I would say.
It's a good movie.
It is a good movie. And it's like they find this stuff in the attic that's like murders and stuff, and they show the murders. It's like, and so I think he want to go a more horror direction with
that movie? Well, Doctor Strange is classified on IMDb as a horror movie.
Right. So because of that, you know, Derrickson seemed like he would make sense, but creative differences. Now, what is Scott Derrickson doing now? Because the thing is, he has so much. Like, I feel like he hasn't done a ton, but
he's still pouting. Yeah, I really wish they would have, but there was no chance that they would do a rated R. Blade will be rated 13, and it's gonna. I don't think it'll be as good as the rated R.
I don't think something has to be rated R for it to be like really good.
No,
but...
no.
I don't know. I feel like Marvel in general is going down the more towards like kid friendly, comedic Disney type of route.
Would you agree that there are certain properties that would need to be rated R?
Yes, I think it would work. I think if they, I don't want everything to be rated R, but I think there are certain like areas they could explore stories, and those stories would only be good if they're rated R.
Yeah, the only thing is like, Marvel is like, it's for all audiences. That's the thing. That's the thing that gets them their money, right? It's for all audiences, but if the second you go rated R, you split that audience in half, and you have $300 million instead of $600 million in a movie.
It would make like the older audience enjoy and appreciate some things more, but they would probably get less money than they would if they made it
kid-friendly. Blade needs to be a rated R franchise, but they're doing it PG-13, which is why I think that this Disney-fying stuff is going
to
ruin something.
And stuff that needs to be rated R to be like accurate and effective, if you make it not rated R, then it's just going to be somewhat inaccurate to the actual story, and it wouldn't be as good. So
yeah, and you already the fans aren't going to be excited about it to begin with. They kind of will have a bad taste in their mouth, especially with something like Blade, where you have something to compare it to that is rated R, that you're like, I want it to be at least kind of like this. I mean, maybe not exactly the same, but you know, now you're not going to get that because Feige's meet a very hard line on this. And obviously from a monetary standpoint, you can see why, like, they're trying to get, but do they need to do that for every single movie?
Yeah,
like,
and is there, they already did Kingpin dirty in Hawkeye.
Yeah, they did him so dirty.
Yeah, because he got beat up by like a 21-year-old girl at 22.
Has no powers.
Yeah, literally. And he's fighting Daredevil and beating Daredevil in the show, and he fights Kate Bishop, a new hero girl who's 22 years old.
It goes back to, she's the main character in her show, so she gets to be the winner of the battle. So.
Yes. Oh my goodness. That frustrating.
Okay, so then this is an interesting thing. Does Marvel not do a good job with, like, making stories where the hero fails? You know, like...
Yes.
I'm trying to think of a good example of, like, a movie where, like, the main character just kind of, like, has moments where they just, like... I mean, maybe the Batman trilogy did it some, where it was, like...
Christopher Nolan, you're saying?
Yeah, like, it allows you to see the flaws in the person at a more deep level, like what's causing them, how they overcome them, that sort of thing. Because the thing about superhero movies is it's supposed to be like the superhero wins the day every time. Maybe that's what would help if you had villain stories. Like, when Marvel first started, it was like, you get a new villain every movie, and then the villain would die, and you never see anything from the villain again.
They still do some of that.
They still do that a lot, because they have to, because you can't, like, I guess you can't keep it going over, like, they want resolution at the end of their movie, so it'd be hard to, like, not have some form of resolution. The only thing they didn't really do that with is, like, Loki and Thanos to an extent, and those are the characters that people really like, so I don't know, maybe they should do more of that.
If you think about it, a lot of the movies that are considered the greatest superhero movies are the ones where the bad guys win in the end. Like Infinity War, The Dark Knight, to an extent, like No Way Home, where, like, I guess the main character loses, not necessarily like the villain wins, but they need to do more of that.
I would say the villain in Black Panther won.
Yeah.
I mean, he won the moral argument almost.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he didn't do it correctly, but he had the same...
I think he had like the more
valid
argument.
He influenced T'Challa's kingdom, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. So I mean, they're just barely putting their foot in the water with that. But yeah, you said like they're doing villains with Sony, but they're not really doing villains with Sony. They're doing anti-heroes, and that's good. But like, anti-heroes are like, Venom's basically good.
Yeah, that's weird to think about.
Tom Hardy's Venom is good. He's a good guy. He's like a superhero. He's not a supervillain. And that's a little annoying.
And it's weird because in the Sam Raimi trilogy, Venom is the bad guy in the third Spider-Man.
So and to have a future Venom will come up too, because the post-credit scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, that it's not really.
All right, we took a brief pause, but we're back. We may cut
that's going to sound
out,
so weird.
It was a very smooth transition. I have no idea.
Yeah, I really snuck that one in there. I completely forgot what we were talking about, though, so I tried to leave, like, a little moment of silence at the start, and then it's like, oh, we're back. Yeah. We were kicking around other ideas for the podcast off air, so now we're, like, completely in a different train of thought, but trying to swing things back to Spider-Man.
Well, you know, something we never talked about was, I mean, we kind of did, Daredevil showed up.
It's
confirmed.
I didn't even know that was Daredevil because I haven't watched the show or anything.
That's so like sad to me. That is such a big moment. Man.
I think a lot of people missed
that. The first time, I didn't even realize I didn't really even put together that he caught the thing while he was blind. Like, it happened so fast that I didn't...
It was like really, 2 minutes.
I didn't really recognize what was going on. Like, with the lawyer. Like, I was like, oh, he's blind. And then, oh, he caught that thing? Oh, now that makes
You're
sense.
You're like, oh, he must be a really good lawyer.
I was like, man, that guy's good at his job. I didn't get the joke at all.
But many people didn't, I bet, yeah.
Yeah.
I did hear the guy next to me in the theater say, "That's," tell his girlfriend or something, "That's Daredevil." And so he was like mansplaining it to her.
I mansplained it to Chris. So, but yeah, and that confirms 6 new shows as part of the MCU. That's crazy.
Does that
confirm all of them? Or just Daredevil?
Because he crosses over with all of them.
That's true.
So Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Defenders, Luke Cage, yeah. Iron Fist, Defenders, and Punisher
are all now canon.
Yes.
Are they gonna like add on to them? Well, those were like the
Daredevil ones, will be. Right? He said Daredevil will be a forefront runner in the future of the MCU. He will be in She-Hulk and a couple other things, is what Kevin Feige, and that's which good. Means that they'll probably bring in the other ones. I don't know what they're gonna do with Iron Fist. Everybody hates that.
And Punisher, they might not focus on all of them like to the extent they will with Daredevil.
Punisher will be cool to bring in. They need to put Punisher and Blade team up.
Yeah. Man, I have a lot of stuff to catch up on in the Marvel department.
I'm not caught up on all of them too, so.
Yeah.
It's okay. Most people are in the same boat.
I want to be perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, the completionist. Scrolled down to the actors, man. What a cast in this movie. I mean, Willem Dafoe coming back is huge. And you got these villains are like top notch actors. Yeah, Alfred Molina, Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx is such a good actor, but he rarely gets the opportunity to really like fully utilize his like acting skill set. I feel like he gets cast in a lot of movies that are kind of like. The movie is just not good, so you don't realize like that he's actually very good. Like Django Unchained is a good movie, or like Baby Driver that we reviewed so long ago.
So now you have to go listen to our Baby Driver review.
Yeah. Man, and Willem Dafoe's like an artsy, like he's in like weird, like really weird movies with like films.
He brought his character back the best, in my opinion.
Oh, no, yeah. He did.
Absolutely.
I think he's easily the most talented. Maybe in the entire, like, movie. In terms of actors, he might be, like, the most talented out of everyone.
I think he had the best performance by far in the movie.
Yeah, just think, like, he didn't wear his mask. In the other movies, he was wearing his mask.
Because you could see his face and his emotion.
It was so creepy.
Yeah.
When he smiles and laughs.
When Tom or Peter is punching him countlessly in the face and he's just laughing the whole time. It's just perfect.
And then Toby stopping him from making a mistake that he would regret. That is big.
Yeah.
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 It was a little awkward the way he was holding it up, though. Like
his face
butt was sticking
awkward.
Out, and like you know, like he moved it, and Toby's movements were just super
Toby
awkward.
Toby Maguire in general is just an awkward type of guy.
Yeah,
like, he looks awkward. The way he moves and the way he just
he's always staring at you.
The way he
awkward.
Smiles, like the way yeah. just everything about him is
he's always
he's so,
staring.
He's so dorky. Like I know that's why they cast him as Spider-Man, but he's just so strange.
And it's not just in movies; like just in general in his life too. He just looks like an awkward type. Type of dude.
Yeah.
I love it though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what he's up to. What's he doing in his personal life? You know that he grew up with like Leonardo DiCaprio? Like they were like friends. I saw that like when they were like little. It's so weird.
Wow, one of them became way more successful.
Well, obviously everyone knew that Leo was going to be a lot more successful, but like at the same time, which one's Spider-Man? And answer, it's not Leonardo DiCaprio.
For now.
So
he'll be another hero soon.
Who do you think they'll actually
at this
ever
point,
get like
be a hero. And Harry Styles is a hero now.
Like
right?
An A-list like I know that would almost ruin like if Leonardo DiCaprio took on a leading role in a Marvel movie, it would almost ruin his like
they need A-list actors to be side characters like Sylvester Stallone in Guardians 2.
Yeah, or like I guess Ben Affleck has been a superhero.
Ben Affleck is going to be the villain for Thor 4.
Really?
Wait, no, I'm thinking of Christian Bale.
Christian Bale.
I always mix those two up every single time. Mm.
Christian Bale's a more natural fit, I guess. I don't know. It's interesting they convinced him. Yeah, but if Leo or Brad Pitt... I mean, Brad Pitt would be... Both of those people are too big for Marvel, which is really odd to say. But, like, you would never believe that either one of those people were a superhero. Either one of those guys. You'd just be like, that's Brad Pitt or that's Leonardo DiCaprio.
They should make them side characters that are human.
Yeah.
That like funny
what
side they,
like,
characters.
Like cameoed themselves in like a movie. Because you could do that in Marvel.
Elon Musk
they
did.
They could still be famous.
In Iron Man 2.
They could still be famous in the Marvel world as themselves. That'd be one creative way to implement them if they ever
that's
wanted
true.
To be.
Huh.
If you're listening, Kevin, we got some ideas
for you. I feel
like
we have like the best ideas.
Yeah,
we should just write the next Marvel movie.
We should be nothing. In the room. with whoever's the think tank is who comes up with the Marvel ideas.
Because like, you know that they have those meetings, and then they probably send out an email to the director of a movie saying you have to include these things for the bigger plan to
work. Use your creative liberties, but also make sure that you fit in all of these points.
Make sure that your characters come to this conclusion with whatever plot you have. Shove in a few things here. Also, you have to include this cameo because of this contract.
I would be fascinated but like to interview or talk to, it wouldn't have to be interview, one of these Marvel, the directors who has directed a Marvel movie. And
probably the Russo brothers would have the most experience. They've had to connect everything.
And understand, like, well, they probably hire people somewhat based on their ability to, like the Russo brothers did Community.
And Arrested Development.
And think about Community as like a really big nerdy web show. But it's like there's a lot of high concepts that they had to connect. So it's like almost like they're looking for a particular type of director when they're recruiting.
That's true.
For Marvel movies. Although then sometimes they randomly get like Chloe Zhao or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was like Academy Award winner, right?
Yeah, she did Nomadland. Like, yeah. And then it's like, now you're going to do a Marvel movie.
But they cast her. They hired her before she won the Academy Award. But
Okay, yeah. And then, you know, this guy John Watts directed Clown and Cop Car. Never heard of either of those movies.
So they took a chance. Wow.
Well, that's my question. Like, what do you have to do to be like a Marvel? This movie got 46% on Rotten Tomatoes, his first movie.
Oh, there's got to be Marvel scouts out there.
And then, like, I guess maybe it's like hiring a GM for an NFL team or a head coach. Maybe it's more like a head coach. So like you might hire a head coach who has never like actually like coached. He's like coaches his position well, but he's like a coordinator or something, or you know, he just didn't have the talent around, but you see the skills somehow.
Yeah. I don't know, coaching on a different level.
Although the second movie did get 80%, but obviously they're not basing anything on Rotten Tomatoes scores. That would be a little bit too. That would be a probably not a great way to pick a director.
So dumb, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's got to be like Marvel scouts out there just lurking, like looking for the next big thing, you know.
If you're a director, this is a good question, and you just directed a semi-successful film that was like, you know, maybe it's like moderately successful. It was a low-budget film and it performed well, and that was like your first film, and your opportunities are either go do a Marvel movie or go do a second film that you can have like complete creative control over and have a pretty decent budget. But the catch is that you'll never be, this is like your only opportunity to ever direct a Marvel movie. But you might be locked into directing Marvel movies if you pick Marvel. Like,
there's a 9-year contract.
For like 9 years, yeah. Like legitimately, that might be the only thing you could work on for like the next 9 or 10 years, which are like some of the most fertile years of your career. Potentially.
And profitable for sure.
Do you roll the dice on yourself or do you take the safe route? Like, how do you make that decision?
Depends on how much control you want, I think.
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't want to direct.
I know I wouldn't do it because I don't think I would. It wouldn't be what I wanted. I don't think
it'd be so hard to connect it.
But on the other hand, it would be kind of sad if your like second movie bombed and you never got an opportunity to make another movie, like because like you would have had guaranteed 3 movies that you get to make.
But is it about the success or do you want to make a movie that you want? Like, yeah, that you want.
That's what they got to go. Some degree it has to be like they're hiring people who really care about comics and making Marvel movies, right? Like some of it comes down to that, I imagine. Like Connor, if you were a director and you grew up with all of this, like watching Marvel and you've gone back and read some of the comics and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like pick the Marvel movie because of that?
It kind of depends like how much control I would have. Because if I had the ability to be creative with it, I think I would take it. But if it was kind of like I'm very working in with lots of limitations and I have to include a lot of stuff and have to make it a certain way, it would be harder to kind of have my fingerprints on it, you know?
Right. And it might not be that you get like a character that you're really passionate about either.
Yeah.
They might be like, this is the spot we have open. It's for... I don't know, what's obscure...
Here, Connor, you have to direct Captain Marvel 3.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might be in a position where you're destined to fail, where you're working with something that you can't change. Like, you have to make it a certain way. Yeah, you can only change minute details.
And on top of that, like, you're a male director directing Captain Marvel. Like, people are gonna pan you because they're gonna be like, "This is a male voice. He doesn't know what he's talking about."
Yeah, I don't know. I would feel so bad because they already changed from the first director to a new director for the second one. So, I think they're shoving in. They're making it like an Avengers 4.5. Almost, really? I think they're shoving a bunch of characters in there to like make her movie better.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, what are the reasons?
It's at the bottom of everyone's lists.
Yeah,
the majority of people that I've watched have it on the bottom, including
Captain Marvel, Guardians 2 are at the bottom for me. I think
same. I think those are actually my bottom two.
Eternals is down there for me now.
Yeah, Eternals.
I think Eternals is like a mid-level movie.
It's so unorganized.
I think it's towards the lower.
I
see. End.
I understand why people don't like it, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it had all the potential that it needed, but for me it was so unorganized and told in such a weird way.
It was told in a weird way.
Yeah, just tell it normally.
They had to introduce like how many characters in one movie? Like 12.
Yeah, and
that was a little.
One of the main characters dies in the first 10 minutes, and then the emotional punch is supposed to come at the end of the movie. What?
No. It's like if you're trying to make Avengers, but like not make any of the movies before,
like DC, like the Justice League,
like Justice, that's true. Yeah, they were it was trying to be like an Avengers level movie, but it just didn't feel like it was because you had no like build up to it. It was just like, oh, here's Eternals.
I think I just like the whole premise of it being there are like bigger beings out there, like above everything we've seen in the Marvel universe so far.
Oh, yeah, it expanded the world well. For sure.
That have like been watching over, I guess, or like are only allowed to contribute to things that are a certain level. Just interesting to me.
Yeah, because then it's like Thanos isn't even like the biggest power technically.
It's like there's someone else always that's bigger.
And I'm so confused. Is Kang the big bad or the Celestials the big bad? What is going on? Or like not even that.
Are they going to start competing against each other, the big bads?
Like, is Kang controlling the timeline, including the Celestials, or the Celestials outside of it? I'm just wondering the power dynamics. It's so confusing.
Because Kang's outside of the timeline, right?
Well, he controls it.
So then I guess the Celestials could be.
But like they're in the world physically. Like
above time? Or
I don't think so. They seem to be in the... Because the world they can just hold in their hand. Like they're born... Like the Earth is an egg, so they're physical beings.
Oh, right. Yeah, they are physical. They're just huge.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that Kang controls them, too.
So Kang is the ultimate, the biggest thing in the entire universe?
Probably. I don't know. Unless... that just cheapens it a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they do with the power dynamics. We'll see who's the most powerful and how they intertwine. Because there's a lot of big forces going on. Like, how do you put in all these things? Yeah. You just got to somehow combine it and say all this is under this.
Trying to understand and make sense of the like everything that happened in Loki is already kind of complicated.
Yeah, that's
true. With the whole timeline, where does it take place?
Yeah, there's already so many plot holes with the timeline stuff.
Yeah.
There's no way. The thing is, once you introduce time travel, you just have to like hope that the audience takes like allows to themselves to suspend their disbelief, because there's like always going to be a way to poke a hole in, like, once you start, that's like, oh, like any Christopher Nolan movie or like Donnie Darko or anything that has to do with time, you can easily like kind of pick it apart if you really think about it. Like,
yeah,
but you choose not to because you want to buy into the movie.
Like, that's why you watch a Marvel movie in the first place.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, that's sometimes I'd be like, oh, this isn't realistic, but then I have to remember like I'm watching like a freaking superhero movie. Like,
yeah,
I didn't watch it, so it's like exactly like my life, you know.
You're telling me that a guy in a metal suit can create, like, a human can create an armor that can morph into different shapes? Like, that's unreal. Come on, not in our time. Come on.
Yeah, not in 2008, you know.
Yeah, or not even in when it is nanotechnology. No, not one guy. That takes a collaborative effort. I guess
the Marvel Cinematic Universe is more advanced in the years.
They definitely are. Earth. I don't know how they haven't cured every single type of cancer yet when they have purple guys.
They're wasting their time. They're wasting their time, like making like war.
Making
weapons.
All these robots and all this battle.
Why, like, cure cancer? Why isn't there flying cars in New York? Like, Wakanda opened itself up to the world like 3 years ago. No, 5 years ago. Before
Infinity That's got to be an infrastructure thing.
Well, yeah, flying cars would take a while, I think. He
was like, how do you...
It's been 8 years.
How do you control the...
Okay, there was a decimation for 5 years. You're right.
Yeah, so that takes everything back down.
But, like, in the next 5 years, if it doesn't look like the future in the world, like, then the superheroes are hoarding everything.
I think that is one thing that they Marvel does a good job at, though, is like there's a lot of superhero movies that they like just have you forget about all the like political consequences of being a superhero, but like Marvel does not let you forget about that. They're always talking about like the ramifications for like the damage and like things that occur because of these battles and the fact that like not everyone would be on the side of like the superheroes that we're on the side of.
Hashtag Thanos was right. Connor has a mug.
Yep.
For every like decision that was made, you know? So
yeah,
it's just, yeah, that makes it, does add another element that makes it a little interesting sometimes.
Yeah,
you get the whole Age of Ultron. What was the like Accords?
Yeah, the Civil War Accords.
Yeah. And then none of that mattered when Thanos came.
It's like, so forget it's like, the government. We're about to die.
Well, yeah, like at some point the stakes become so high that everyone
that
forgets.
That means Cap was right.
Everyone forgets about.
Cap was right.
I have to.
Cap
agree
was not capping.
I have to.
Capping.
I have to agree with Cap, man.
I was definitely on. I mean, the viewer was supposed to be on his side because it was his movie. So,
and there was one point,
his movie, so he wins.
Yep. And there's one point where Iron Man, like, he's like, he didn't kill your parents. He was under mind control. And Iron Man says, I don't care. He killed my mom. Like, that's just, Iron Man's just killing someone now.
To be fair, in a moment of extreme emotion,
yes,
I think that.
But he should be over that
okay,
now. He's done five movies before this.
I completely agree with Team Cap. But if I was, like, in that moment and, like, somebody killed my mom, even if it was like under mind control, I feel like I would like I would lose like critical thinking.
Okay.
And I would just go, my emotions would take over.
It would be all instinctual.
Right.
Yeah.
Rage.
That's
you're right. But I feel like Iron Man's done this so many times already. He's been in these battles, these tense battles where someone kills someone, you know,
but not anybody super close to him.
You're right.
Right,
yeah. Anyway, I just,
yeah,
that's something that hurts me about Iron Man, but I like Iron Man, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's where it all started.
He's aight.
Aight.
It's where it all began.
Yep.
Tony Stark is the father, and what's his name? Steve Rogers is the mother.
No, what would Steve be? Steve would be the grandpa.
The grandpa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's true. He'd be the grandpa.
Yeah. Kevin Feige is the
great grandpa. Scarlett Johansson is the mother.
And Hawkeye's the rotten kid.
The forgotten third child.
And Hulk is adopted.
I think Wanda's the rotten kid.
Yeah, Wanda. Well, Wanda's like the great-great-grandchild. As you go down, so new
she's
heroes.
Like, she's the baby.
It's like Kate Bishop is like great-great-great-great-great-grandchild.
Right, yeah.
That was stupid.
And Ant-Man's like the forgotten cousin. Anyway.
Forgotten dead
I think
cousin.
This is the natural
and conclusion. Thor's the weird uncle.
He actually
weird slash is. Cool slash
he'd be,
creepy
he
uncle.
Would be the cool uncle.
Oh, he's in Endgame, he's the cool, he'd be the coolest uncle.
Yeah, you're right.
Endgame
yeah.
version of Thor.
Yeah. He's oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's hilarious and
he's got
a
uncle
little
Bod.
Creepy. Yeah.
It'd be perfect.
Did you say a little creepy?
A little.
Maybe,
I
mean,
I don't know. For kids, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
For kids. Maybe. Maybe. The overgrown hair and stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it is good to be back, everyone. It's good. It feels right. And we know that we might have put our own endeavors and our own lives and our own responsibilities over our responsibility to you, the viewer. I keep calling them the viewers, even though they can't watch us.
The listener.
You know, but suck it up, you know?
I agree. No, I agree with that.
I'm kind of kidding, though, because, like, I'm acting like we have, like, tons of listeners who are, like, on the edge of their seat for us to release a new episode, and that's not necessarily the case, but this is the world that I created, so I can believe whatever I want.
Yep, we are just like culture.
Yeah.
It's Ben's world. And we're all
this is living. My identity. I'm a podcaster. You have to accept my identity as a podcaster.
Yes. Yeah, I accept you, Ben.
And if you don't say I'm a successful podcaster, I'm going to get mad at you.
And disagree with you.
Say bad things about you on Twitter.
Yeah. And it's his podcast, so he wins.
Yeah.
My podcast, my rules.
My podcast, my podcast. Delusions. Although we call delusions identity. Never mind. All right. Okay. Spicy. So, with that, I agree. I'm glad that we're back at it. And we'll be more intentional in finding time because the time just kind of went by. So
yeah.
Yep.
All right. Time to close the vault door.
Connor, would you like to close it?
That was the close.
Wow. That was our coolest one yet, probably.
Yeah, I agree.
Top five at least.
Yep.
in that vault closing cinematic universe.